The only candidate who was on point did that. No, I mean the one who just left.
You have been very kind.
I think the only candidate.
What about Mr. Linden?
Yeah, and Linden as well. And I think waiting on Linden being a white man.
Being
a mother from Linden.
Hey.
So there are Linden, this one,
I think the female in the beginning, I know she went around, but if you're ranking, she had the green flag, Miss Pikelet Mushi. Were you there?
The one from the
Miss Pikelet, yeah, were you? I don't think you were there.
I joined there halfway.
Mr. Peter Zimri, we are here as a subcommittee of the Portfolio Committee on Communications in the National Assembly. The National Assembly rules do make provision that the Portfolio Committee can create a subcommittee to focus on a specific matter. Ours is to focus on the appointment process of the CASA Council, which is the reason you are here as nominated. Without a waste of time, I will just outline quickly how we are going to proceed. Firstly, I will introduce briefly the members around the table. Thereafter, we'll then give you an opportunity, understanding that we have also seen your CV and the presentation, that you will introduce yourself briefly, and that introduction should immediately lead you to the topic that you've chosen, which must be done in 10 minutes maximum. Each member would have 5 minutes maximum to ask questions or comment or anything that you may have to respond to within that 5 minutes allocated to the member. That will then take us to the closure once all members would have engaged with you. I think that's clear. In that score, I'll start on my right. You have Honorable Kubeka. Next to her is Honorable Mlala. Honorable Faku. We have Honorable Van Dam. Honorable Dr. Ndlozi, as you saw, he's just walked out, he'll be coming back. As a person that I know, you've been outside, you probably would have seen Honorable Machozi, but she had to leave because of bereavement. However, I agreed that the committee proceed on the basis that we have a call. So in that score, I am Honorable Maneli, who's chairing today. I will then allow you now an opportunity to, as I said, briefly introduce yourself, and that intro should also lead you to the presentation, 10-minute presentation of the topic that you've chosen. Over to you, Mr. Zimri.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. Chairperson, yes, my name is Peter Zimri, as you can see on my CV and also the application, and I'm currently one of the ICASA councillors and serving the term until the end of March, the end of this financial year. Chairperson, just firstly before I start, I just want to like to thank this committee for shortlisting me for this very important position. I think it's such an important position for taking the country forward in terms of economic development, in terms of where we see ourselves in the ICT space and also in the broadcasting space. Jefferson, yeah, there are, my CV changed a bit since the last, when I submit my CV to this committee. I'm currently the chairman of the African Telecommunications Union in terms of preparatory work for WRC 2023. And also, Chair, quite recently I was also appointed to the vice chair and also to represent the continent at the World Radio Communications Conference in Egypt in Sharm el-Sheikh. And my term as the acting or the chairperson of the African Telecommunication Union will run until they appoint a new chair. But I'm representing the Republic of South Africa in that capacity. Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, I also do have a lot of a few other responsibilities currently as an ICASA councillor. I'm also currently chairing the IMT, or the International Mobile Telecommunications Licensing Process. I'm also sort of chairing the Spectrum Resources Committee, that's a special committee within ICASA. I'm also responsible for chairing the numbering resources within ICASA. That's also another committee that I'm chairing. One of the other committees that I'm chairing is the Standards and Type Approval Committee within ICASA, dealing with the development of standards and so on, and type approving of equipment, ICT equipment. Chair, I do have other responsibilities, which possibly you might not find in my CV, but I'm also chairing or co-chairing a what they call the digital sound broadcasting development, especially on the regulatory side. I'm co-chairing that with my fellow councillor. Then there's another project that we're working on in terms of our regional and international engagement. In terms of we're looking at reducing roaming cost within the region. In the SADC region, that's one of the projects I'm also leading from an ICASA point of view. And also from a continental point of view, there's a Smart Africa Alliance that I'm also sort of leading from a regulated point of view. We'll be looking at the One Africa network and also looking at how do we reduce costs of communications across these member states, the 55 member states that we do have on the African continent. Chair, but those are some of the committees that I'm chairing and leading within ICASA. Chair, just to further introduce myself, like I said, you do have my CV, you looked at my CV, and I don't think I have to go too much in detail on that. There are some initiatives on the continent, I think, especially now that we, as South Africa, or the Republic of South Africa, we're chairing the African Union, and I believe that the momentum is there, and I think that for us as a country, we just need to move forward on that. I've also been involved in some projects, a wireless open access network, or not wireless, but a wholesale open access network in Botswana. I spent some time in Gaborone to assist the government of Botswana to set up Bofinet as an operator, and basically separating BTC and into two, Bofinet and BTCL, the Botswana Telecommunications Limited organization. So, and then also in the Kingdom of Eswatini, I was also assisting SPTC in terms of their regulatory framework while I was consulting and also working for a company, basically Liquid Telecommunications at that point in time, where they'd be looking at transformation within in the Kingdom of Eswatini, dealing with the regulatory issues on that side. So, Chair, that's in brief my sort of background. And again, like I said, I'm still serving as a councillor, and hopefully we can take this momentum that we have at the moment as a country and take this forward. Thank you, Chair. Chair, if you allow me, can I go straight into the presentation? Chair, yes, thank you very much for this. I think the two topics that was on And I basically looked at the institutional arrangements and approaches within in the ITU handbook, and also looking at in the context of our national development plan, and also the national integrated information ICT policy review report, and looking at how, where does ICASA fit into this. My presentation to a certain extent covers the need for regulation, just to give a context, why do we regulate, and so on, and then regulator institutional structures, and sort of the dimensions of an effective regulator, looking at that, and then obviously looking at the process of liberalization within in the South African context. Chair, the first slide is basically dealing with sort of the evolution of regulatory reforms in within South Africa. And I think we're not different from any other jurisdiction. There might be some anomalies, but I think in this context, the last figures that we saw in that ITU handbook was almost like 75% of countries went this direction, where you start off with a monopoly and moving towards full liberalization. In terms of a monopoly status, this is basically where the government is a provider of communication systems, and there is very limited competition in the field then. And some of these things tend to create inefficiencies in terms of delivery, but there are other examples where monopolies actually work. It doesn't mean that the monopolies is not is a dead end. There are monopolies that work to a large extent. A private monopoly, Chair, is that, when there's a private monopoly or a commercialized operator like Telkom used to be, so you need to have some more regulations, or there's a need for regulation because you need to then have put obligations to these to the operator and to ensure that they deliver on that mandate. It is partial competition, Chair, and on the honourable members. Partial competition basically where you're setting tariffs and you basically need more regulation on that, and then the full competition, which the South African ICT space, basically we do have full competition. But as you can see, Chair, there should be a decrease in need for regulation because the competition is supposed to sort out the market and basically shift itself to sort of an exposed regulation environment. And this is, I think, Chair, this is a point, to make this point is that this is where I think the government possibly believe that there must be some sort of intervention, because if there's full liberalization, you expect that affordability and prices should come down. I think this is an important aspect to just to mention that. Chair, my next slide also dealing with some of the things that I mentioned. Why do we regulate? Obviously to avoid market failure, to foster effective competition, and to put basically the biggest thing for ICASA in the consumer interest and the public interest, to protect consumers, and also to increase access to the latest technology and services. So the next slide is, and honourable members, the next slide is basically a regulatory institutional structure. So you have your policy development, which is government, the ministries, and the executive branch. Then you will have regulation, which is you need regulators to deal with regulation, and basically to a large extent you need a separate regulatory authority or an independent authority. Then at the lower end, you have your network operations, your service providers, which is privately owned or a commercialized or operated telecommunications operator. In terms of the dimensions of an effective regulator, this is contained in the ICT handbook, telecommunications ICT handbook. We're talking about the structural independence, financial independence, and possibly most important, the functional independence or functionality of the regulator itself. In terms of statutory independence, Chair, we, as a regulator, we also don't work within a vacuum. There are elements that we need to look into. We do have various international commitments, and as members can recall, we do have the WTO commitments and in terms of the reference paper on telecommunications, which we basically have to adhere to. As a country, we are signatory of that document. Then obviously funding independence, and it should be free from political and private interest influence, and more so the private interest influence. I think it's important that we, as a regulator, that we govern that and make sure that we do not get captured by the sector or by any other sector. Thank you. In terms of functionality, Chair, the key for us is to be a credible regulator. Corporate governance is key to it, and there must be a separation of powers and duty, which is to a large extent is enshrined in our constitution and also in the Electronic Communications Act. There are some institutional design options, Chairperson and honourable members. You get the options of a single sector regulator, which is sort of when there's that basically will regulate the telco, or maybe the broadcasting, or the postal sector. So these are single regulators or sector regulators. And what we currently have in South Africa is a converged regulator. That's what ICASA is at the moment. It's a telco, broadcasting, or postal, which is converged in one regulator. Then you also find there are multi-sector regulators where you're looking at utilities. Your utilities such as your roads and transport, your energy regulators, and so on. Those are utility regulators that we can possibly, as I've seen some models in Rwanda, I've seen some models in a few other countries where these regulators are very active, as mostly also in your smaller or your island states where these regulators are very effective, due to the fact of resources and possibly the countries are a bit smaller to manage. And then you find in some jurisdictions you get a no specific regulator, basically where your competition authority then look at the whole range of issues. And at the moment in South Africa, our competition authority is looking at from automotive to telco and to all kinds of sectors and so on. Chair, on this slide, it's basically just a sort of a balancing act that we have. Is our international commitments and interaction that we have, and also the national interaction that we have. We, as a regulator, as ICASA, we interact with a host of other regulators, the Competition Commission, USASA, the MDDA, DOSATNA, or the Domain Name Authority, and also especially with other government departments, public enterprises, DTI, the Department of Science and Technology, the Department of Health, and so on. So, Chair, these are all entities that we, as a regulator, will have to interact with on a national and internationally. We have various interaction with the African Telecommunication Union, the SADC, the Southern African Developing Community. There's also issues around the Southern African Broadcasting Association and also to a large extent the African Broadcasting Association. We do in SADC we do have what we call the Communications Regulatory Association of Southern Africa, and on the continent there's a new entity that was just established. That is your Council of Regulators that falls under the Smart Africa Alliance, which is currently chaired by the President of Rwanda, Paul Kagame. And so we, as South Africa and ICASA, we participate on behalf of the Republic in these organizations. So broadly, in terms of the policy and legislative framework, I'm sure you you heard about the National Development Plan that we subscribe to as a regulator. When we develop our strat plans, our annual performance plans, at cascade from the National Development Plan. There are also other documents. What we also have to adhere to is a National Integrated ICT White Paper, which that, to a certain extent, I think is something that we as an authority, we will have to be carefully managed and look into. There are some issues that just in terms of the spectrum licensing framework, the policy and policy direction. The policy on high demand spectrum sort of takes preference over what is now in the ICT white paper or ICT integrated ICT policy. And it's something that we as a regulator are at this point in time considering and to see whether there's alignment or not. Then obviously the ICASA Act and the Electronic Communications Act that deals with the establishment of the licensing framework. One other document that is in our purview is the broadcasting digital migration policy that was amended from 2008, and I think 2012 there was another amendment to it. Basically, taking care of how do we go about introducing digital broadcasting in South Africa as a country. And I think the big issue with this, with DTT or the digital migration, it's not only South Africa that's battling with it. I think most of the countries on the continent, although there are a few countries that they migrated, neighbor next door, Namibia, Tanzania, and also to a large extent Kenya. Kenya, they went full DTT. But there are some issues and things that we as a regulator will have to consider. Just on this slide, these are some of the players that we closely interact with, the Competition Authority, USASA, and then also quite recently the National Consumer Commission. We have to interact with them very closely in terms of data expiry and so on. This is basically what we work with them currently. Chair, this slide just given a sort of a brief illustration of what transpired within our phases of liberalization. We used to have the telecommunication exclusivity for 5 years from 1997 to 2002. Then there was the next phase around about 2004, the ministerial determinations on facilities leasing. In that period, around about 2008, there was this court case, the Altec court case, which then fully liberalized the market. But as I mentioned earlier on, it appears to be to us is that there's a more need for intervention or more need for regulation in the space after June 2008. I think the idea is when the market is fully liberalized or is competitive, there should be no need for more regulation. But I think while in a South African context, it looks like we're creating more regulatory frameworks and so on. In terms of just briefly, Chair, to take you through the international telecommunications. So we are operating on the slide in the Africa, Middle East, and in Europe environment. And this is basically a very much a historical coordination that we do. Whatever regulations and policies that we implement, we tend to align ourselves with Europe and Middle East. But there are other influences from the Americas and also from the East, China, Japan, Australia, and so on. So there are some influences that also influence our policies and regulatory frameworks, especially in terms of telecommunications or ICT standards and equipment. As a continent, we do little, very little manufacturing, and we do very little development of these devices. We tend to be consumers of electronic devices, and I think this is where we get the influences from. In terms of the spectrum management, institutional arrangement, I'm trying to manage my time, Chair. Thank you. Chair, I will go briefly into this. I think it's possibly an important issue that we quickly want. I quickly just want to take the committee through. There is the spectrum management institutional framework. On the top, you do have the International Telecommunications Union, which then, where the World Radio Conferences will revise radio regulations and come up with new spectrum allocations, with what we did recently on the IMT 2020 spectrum assignment or allocations, which is colloquially known as the 5G services or 5G equipment. Then from on a local level, Chair, obviously the DCDT basically set policy on spectrum management. But there are also others that's involved in spectrum management activities in South Africa. It is the South African Civil Aviation Authority. There's also the Department of Science and Technology in terms of the SKA, or the Square Kilometer Array. And there's also the Department of Health that deals with safety and radiation of devices and equipment. And the South African Maritime Authority, that SAMHSA, that deals with maritime safety, maritime communications. And it doesn't on this chair, but essentially we never had communications on the South Pole. Because our jurisdiction sits as far as the South Pole, because there was no competition, it was only Inmarsat that used to provide satellite services or what they call global positioning systems. At the WRC 19, we actually achieved to then cover the South Pole. We do have satellite communications at the South Pole, which will make sure that we can basically deal with these accidents and safety requirements down at the South Pole. So briefly, this is basically the National Spectrum Management Framework. I'm not going into much detail on this. Our basis for spectrum management is basically on the National Table of Frequency Allocations. And from that, we will do the assignments to the government and also the commercial operators. And this assignment basically then will be eventually what people will use as their electronic communications devices. Thank you.
As I said, do we have the presentation?
Sure.
So can we then look at members to engage the presentation? I'll start again with Honorable Fago.
Thank you for your presentation. As a current council member, I know you want to come back and you are here today. what are you bringing that is new? Where do you think that if given an opportunity again to serve in the council, where can you improve? What are the changes? I hear that part of your presentation, which is consistent even from other candidates, the issue of interference. Do you feel there's interference? And I request you, when you respond to this question, that you are honest and open so that if given an opportunity, as a committee that is doing oversight, the same thing does not happen over and over again.
Thank you, Honourable Committee Member and Chair. Yeah, thank you. As a councillor, I think there's a lot of activities that I can still contribute. We just started this whole IMT licensing process. There is also a lot of developments on the continent, I think, where we did some good things as as South Africa, in fact, to chairing this and basically being the vice chair of the International Telecommunications World Radio Conference. My contribution will be to look at how do we develop the continent in terms of the African Union environment, and also in terms of the African Free Trade Agreement that has just been signed and will be that will kick in July 2020. So on that context, I think I believe I can still contribute much more. My initial joining or being nominated as a councillor at ICASA, I felt at the time that at being in the sector, being a consultant, being I've done the 360 with a policymaker, ICASA is possibly the best place where I think I can make a much more broader contribution. And spectrum management is one of my possibly my core competencies, and I think this is where I can contribute much more and taking the country forward and make sure that there will be some investment. I think there's a lot of investment opportunities at this point in time that I think we might have to engage on. Thank you.
The issue of interference.
It's not only in our jurisdiction that happens all over the world. As a regulator, we do have the law, and if you stick to the law, our independence is enshrined in the Constitution under Section 192. And the moment you deviate from that, you find yourself in a conundrum, and you have to sort of deal with all kinds of things. But as long as you stick to the Constitution and the law, I think your independence will be intact. We, as ICASA, there are examples that we, in our term at this point in time, that we basically proud, we can possibly say proudly that we did something that we protect to very much our independence as an authority, especially from the period that I started in 2016. Thank you.
I think you are not responding to my question. You are trying to manage me in responding to this question. I don't know. Maybe there's this ho-ho that is frightening you, councillors, of not responding to this question correctly. But anyway, you have been part of the council. There's a date set to auction spectrum. Are we ready? Because there's some rumors that says that you are not ready to release spectrum. What is your view?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. As members can recall, in 2016, we did publish an invitation to apply, which was then taken on review by the then Minister of Communications or Telecommunications and Postal Services. And we are, in fact, actually chairing the actual IMT licensing process at this point in time at ICASA. We looked at the framework at the time, and we believe that we can definitely achieve this within this financial year, the 2020 to 21 financial year.
Oh, are you assuring us?
This is what we promised, and I think the President made an announcement on that. And I think the Minister of Finance has also made an announcement yesterday about it.
Okay. I'm listening at you when you are talking about the National Integrated ICT Policy, whatever, the objective. Seemingly, that is because there are issues that you don't agree on that are on the policy. I don't know if I've captured you correctly.
Yes, sir. If you look at what the National Integrated ICT Policy or White Paper presents, it creates an ICT regulator, and it also then separates the broadcasting from the ICT regulator. So the ICT regulator will deal with issues around internet governance or internet regulation and the ICT space or telecommunication space. and the broadcasting space, or the broadcasting regulator will be removed from CASA. The question that we, as a regulator, we ask ourselves, what then happened to the independence of the regulator? And how will that then be dealt with? Currently, the independence of ICASA is enshrined in the Constitution as a Chapter 9 institution. So, and this is basically, we made some submissions on the policy review and also the current white paper. So our position, basically, looking at that, also looking at the funding options of ICASA, our position was always that we possibly have to have a hybrid funding model, where we retain some of the, at least some of the spectrum fees or fees that we generate or accumulate, and so on. So there are some issues that we, as a regulator, will have to look into. Then around the spectrum, and it's one of the issues that we, as a regulator, the development of the plan is pressed with ICASA at this point in time, although the Minister of approves the plan. The National Radio Frequency Plan, and we do get policy and policy directions from the Minister on that. So, yes, our questions are around how do you deal with this kind of elements in terms of that. Thank you.
So, I understand the policies within the department, and you guys are only focusing on licensing. Are you given a platform where you make submissions in terms of policy? Do you make inputs, and are your inputs recommended, or what is happening? Because it seems that, like at this point in time, there's this policy, and as the council, there are things that you feel that it's interfering with your independence.
Thank you, honourable member. Yes, as a CASA, the normal circumstances, you should be consulted. It's happening, but it's happening in various fashions. You can be consulted through a public process, or you can be consulted through a colloquium or a meeting, and so on. That can be seen as part of consultation. The Electronic Communication Act requires that the customer need to be consulted if there is a policy development and so on.
Currently, are not consulted.
Yes, we do get consultants. We have regular meetings with the minister and also the policymakers.
Thank you.
Honourable Dr. Ngozi. Sure. How are you? Now, how long have you been in ICASA?
As a councillor,
yes.
This is now since 2016. My term ends at the end of March. Four years. Term, yeah.
What have you achieved?
I think throughout our term, I'm basically the lead for ICASA on spectrum resources. We've developed the latest band plan in 2018. Unfortunately, we couldn't license the spectrum as we wished at the time when we published the ITA. We couldn't license the spectrum to take the country forward. There are also issues around universal service and access. And again, as I mentioned earlier on continental and also on a regional level, we are looking at reducing the cost of communications.
You have not reduced the cost. Spectrum has not been... You don't have any achievement that you can give me except things that are in process. 110. One achievement like this we did successfully. Is everything else still in process that you guys did?
We are, Chair, and honourable member, thank you very much for that question. Yes, we are a lot of I think it's what we discuss also, and I think it's which the committee actually dealt with, is a term of councillors, I think. Whether a four-year term is sufficient, although there will
what
be...
What are you talking about achievement? Okay, so you can't give me any.
If I can just maybe finish that, I can get there.
No, I don't have time. They're going to stop me very soon. I'm battling with things in my head. I need to take a decision what my position is regarding you. So these questions have to do with that. Do you or do you not have an achievement that is tangible that you can give me, except things that are in process?
We, as an authority, we the data the rollover and the data expiry is something that we published as a regulator, putting regulations in place. We also looked at various other aspects of within the regulated space. We are doing some inquiries in the data market, mobile broadband inquiry, and also putting regulations in place to make sure that in terms of the all termination rates in South Africa, that's
okay.
Something that we dealt with.
Now, I think the biggest failure of ICASA, I mean, beyond telecoms, is broadcasting. ICASA has been held seriously with its balls when it comes to reproducing the domination of multi-choice. Now, no, it's not. Is that a bad language? You can say first myself balls. I thought it's not my first language. I mean, I guess. So I think the opportunity of how do you break the domination of multi-choice? What are the practical things that can happen to break that domination within the pay TV market?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member. What we busy with at the moment, we do have an inquiry on subscription broadcasting, and we came up with a preliminary findings on that, and this is what ICASA will have to sort of carry through and then ensure that we look at all these, the outcomes of that inquiry. And I think basically because of ICASA, we have to, within the law, to look at the thing very carefully.
Through you, try to answer directly. I don't know if anyone can help me, but problem. Domination of ICASA. What are your ideas? You want to be in the council back. Convince me that you've got ideas about the breaking of that domination. Tell me what are those ideas. You get what I mean? Not preliminary reports which are in process. You're not saying anything to my question.
Yes, as ICASA, we need to operate within the law and within our processes. There are some various interventions that can be done by once we finalize our inquiry and the findings. There are issues such as how do you then sort of decouple or unbundle the pricing or the packages that multi-choice and as on DSTV, how do you deal with that? Those things. It needs some further studies, and we need to be careful how do we if we don't distort the pricing and so on. To declare somebody dominant within the space, there is we need to finalize our Chapter 10 inquiry to ensure that's in place, so that we can then make further interventions on that. Thank you.
So you don't have ideas on how to break ICASA's domination. That's how I'm leaving this question. Second question, or the third. Let's say broadcasting moves online, completely internet, or at least 40% of it. It's people doing radio, television, films online. And in order for people to access them, they download applications, or they just directly watch on the internet. What would be the frameworks of regulation under those conditions?
In terms of the online space, especially the internet space, it's something that we subscribe to the net neutrality and open access. But I think one of the issues that we need to be careful about is that whether we can actually regulate a one-to-one subscription between a subscriber and the entity that's actually broadcasting. The online space at the moment, there are a few online broadcasters out there that basically they're not regulated, but also we need to look at also obviously issues of privacy, issues of content and so on. But from a an internet point of view, it's very difficult to regulate online content. And that goes hand in hand with
data. Let me put it differently. If broadcasting were to happen completely online, can, under the current condition, SABC still be a free to air?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, there are people that, well, we do have a lot of people in this country that do not have access to internet. And I think that is the biggest stumbling block for this in South Africa. And it's not only South Africa, it's the continent as a whole. There are many people that are not connected. And data pricing is still high. We need to ensure that people can actually afford to get online and actually also then access this broadcasting services, which is online, which costs a lot of money. It's an affordability issue.
That's fine. Now, the last one, Chair, am I still safe? Okay. DTT has failed. I'm sure you agree. I think ICASA has something very big to do with that. DTT has... Why shouldn't the SABC move to direct to home?
Yes, that's another issue that... As the regulator, well, the DTT doesn't fall squarely within the ambit of ICASA. It's a process that's handled by the policymaker at this point in time under the digital migration advisory group, and also with...
You do have regulations on DTT.
Yes, we do. We do.
Okay.
But the implementation of those regulations, it's important that we deal with it. But the issue around satellite versus your actual terrestrial, satellite services are quite expensive. I mean, it's not anybody that can afford a satellite service. In terms of this deployment of those networks, it can be complicated. We do have a lot of unsettled, informal settlements. For everyone to install a satellite direct-to-home service, you need a proper structure to do that. And you also need to have proper installations and better alignment. It's a line-of-sight communications service. Whereas with DTT, you do have a much broader coverage. You can actually cover quite a big area. So with satellite, but the issue is you need a specialized installation on satellite communications, which most people possibly can't afford.
That's not true.
It is true. If I
may. There are only 3 million people, all those that did. I'm very disappointed in that.
Okay,
I'm done, eh?
Yeah, you're done.
Okay.
So, Honorable Fandam.
Ah, why are you sleeping?
You did well. In time. But today I gave you. You might put a stage for you here. It's the chair, not you.
Okay, sorry, Mr. Zinvi. So I sometimes like to listen as you give answers to questions, but I'm not very sold. Look, I understand you have the necessary education, experience, etc. But my biggest problem with government is that things move slowly. It's like a lumbering giant. And what we need at ICASA, because I think it's going to be one of the key institutions for the digital revolution. And for ICASA to be ahead of the curve, to be able to say, this is what's coming around the corner, we need to put out the regulations, instead of saying, waiting for something, and then there's a whole long process with the regulations. So what I'm doing by listening is listening to your type of thinking, right? And I'm not getting the sense of, you know, you being a disruptive person, not disruptive as in, you know, causing disruption, but your thinking being disruptive, because that's what's needed, right? You need people that are innovative in their thinking, that are very with it. So I'm not really getting that. and I guess it's a very, not really, it's, I'm asking you to prove me wrong, and I'm not going to, I'm going to just let you speak because I want to hear your hearing. I'm not going to stop you. I want to hear your, sorry, your thinking. Try not to be a politician, because you're answering your questions like a government official. You are, you know, Honorable Sako asked you about political interference. You should have said, 1, 2, 3, happened. And Honorable Jose asked you questions, and you're doing this. We're not looking to hire government officials, because that's how they speak. You're hiring someone to put it in CASA, to be at the forefront of the digital revolution, to deal with issues of market dominance. So, come on.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member. Yes, we as a regulator, that's why we participate in all...
Sorry, you're not we as a regulator. We're not interviewing ICASA here. You're not here representing ICASA. Yeah. You're representing Peter Zimri. So don't, you're not here to do a annual report of ICASA. Mm-hmm. We're interviewing you. So I want to know about you. I'm not interested in ICASA did this, ICASA did that, we... Because you're selling yourself. You're not selling your CASA.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. Yes, just from a personal point of view, and I think this is what my passion is all about.
Yeah.
It's our international engagement and also to develop this continent of us. Looking at the African unity, looking at all these things, on especially from an African unity point of view, spectrum and spectrum management, especially one of those areas where we can unify as a continent. We just proved that at the WRC 19, we have unified or harmonized positions. On the of the continent at the World Radio Conference, which is basically the what we call the Olympics of radio communications. We also managed to come away with from that conference on spectrum 5G or the latest technologies, and this is basically what we myself I was chairing that the continent at this meeting. Which I was passionate about, basically to ensure that we do get access to those 5G services, we do get access to IMP 2020, we do get access to these frequency bands, that make sure that we can then connect our continent, connect our countries and so on. Whereas the developed world, they see Africa as a place where development can still take place. But as a person, I think for me it's important that this happens, that we harmonize our policy frameworks on the continent, also ensure that we looking at various developments, because at the moment we are, like you said earlier on, we are consumers of electronic devices. We need to build these things on the continent.
Okay, so your two passions are 5G, spectrum allocation, which if everything goes according to the timelines that you set will happen pretty soon, and it is for manufacturing of electronic devices on the African continent. Those are your two passions.
Well, I do have other issues that I, at the moment I'm also co-chairing the unreserved postal services, which is part of our responsibilities. At the moment, our post office is basically the mail service are dying. It's something that we need to look into and see how do we deal with that.
See, I'm going to give you one last chance. The things that you've spoken about, your passions, are all postal services. Like I said, it's dying. 5G, that's going to be done soon. Manufacturing of electronic devices, that isn't really something your CASA is responsible for. Because we are going to appoint people to take us into the future, right? And South Africa is far behind, especially when it comes to regulation, legislation, and so forth. So going into the future, I don't like the phrase fourth industrial revolution because it's so overused and people don't really get it. as I like to use the word, digital revolution. There's a whole lot of exciting stuff coming up. And, you know, we need people that are knowledgeable and very excited about that and understand that. So that you can't come here and tell us about the post office and it's like, well, you know. So that's what I'm looking for. That's the kind of, you know, speaking about being a disruptive person. That's the kind of one last answer.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you, Chair. Yes, sir. There's a lot of other technologies out there that that we deal with. I personally get involved in it. There's artificial intelligence in that space. There's Internet of Things. They call it Internet of Everything. We're looking at 50 billion devices that will be connected soon. And these are stats that come from various manufacturers and so on. There are also other technologies out there that we, as myself, actually get involved in and basically studying. I'm basically also very passionate about those things and make sure that as a country, we're on the forefront of these technologies and ensure that this gets implemented and also developed in our country and also on the continent.
Thanks, Chair. I only have two questions, and I don't have a follow-up question. And if I'm not happy, I'll hold you outside and look for answers. In your presentation, you raised something very important. You said in South Africa, high cities have got full competition. And in the very same slide, you said, therefore, once there's full competition, there's no need for regulation, but rather they should have sorts of self-regulation. Did I understand you properly? You further said that if you were asked to make a recommendation about the funding model, you would prefer hybrids, both Parliament, private sort of funding, which means the money that you get on levies plus some allocation from Parliament. Did I understand you correctly?
I can I explain that?
Yes. No, you can explain, but I wanted just to say yes or no, because this is what you wrote. It's not what I said. I'm just quoting what you said. So if you explain, you're going to explain something else. I'm saying what you're saying is that in South Africa, Durban, Cape Town, Joburg, these big cities are fully competitive in terms of your analysis. And those that are fully competitive should have some form of self-regulation. And I ask you, is that what you said? Yes. Now, I went to the second one. Now, if I'm misquoting the second one, you must say so that I give you space to respond. Am I misquoting the second one?
The funding model, especially, I think it's the hybrid model, meaning that partly government funded, and if there's funding that we need to get from the license fees or enforcement, I think that's what you refer to as a hybrid model.
That we agree on, yeah. That one. There's no distortion. Now, the reason I'm raising that is it's because the very second part relates to the last. So where you are planning to move out of the state, which for me says you are leaving out that public interest that everybody spoke about. Because if you are competitive, it means after you connect the rural areas, then you are gone, you are self-regulating, in simple terms. But from where I'm sitting, it's still a digital divide. This explanation still says the rich are fine. If we had two countries, we'd say let them regulate themselves in your presentation, and then the poor can be regulated, though they don't have money. I don't know how you regulate someone who does not have money. But I think the whole question is in the whole of your presentation, you have not given an emphasis on the public mandate interest. So if you can talk about that, I will not have a follow-up question. Just talk about that, because in your whole presentation, I've not heard you speaking about that. The the other question is, in the last one, in your view, what are the current unresolved challenges in ICASA? That's all.
What you say?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Member, for those questions. Yes, one believes that in a fully liberalized or competitive environment that there should be very little intervention or very little regulation. And that's exactly what the opposite that's happening in South Africa. And we need to, as a regulator, we need to then intervene in those markets where there is a failure, or regulatory failure at least, to ensure that we look at the needs of the poor, and also need to look at the needs of our underserved areas. That's why we need to impose certain universal service obligations to these operators. We operators are claiming they cover the entire country with about 95% to 95%, but that is population coverage. But then you need to get to that extra percentage or 5%. And that is what we as a regulator need to make sure that we address that those areas that's underserviced and not covered. Typical examples that we have is it's an issue around affordability. You have place like Langa here in Cape Town, for instance, which is, there are networks there, but it's an affordability issue. How do you then as a regulator ensure that people can actually access those networks that's available at the moment? Same thing in Gauteng. Alexandra is in Sandton, basically, and the networks are there. But how do you ensure that people can actually access those networks? And that's why you have to then put in more regulation to ensure that people can access those networks that's available in those areas. That's the one question. In terms of the funding, our colleagues next door in Botswana, for instance, I'll just make an example. They retain some of the funds, and whatever is left over in the fund, or at least for their regulatory function, that will go into a universal service fund, which the authority, the Botswana regulatory authority, then manage and basically then ensure that they roll out the universal service and access, or universal service to the underserviced areas. That's a hybrid model. What we as also as a regulator looking at the moment we generate in the region of possibly over 2 billion rand of license fees. For sure, we as a CASA, we don't need all that money to regulate the sector. So part of that money will basically possibly have to be returned to government, and part of the money will be retained by the regulator to at least run the regulator, and also to ensure that we do the necessary enforcement and put the sort of regulator process in place that's needed for this country. In terms of the unresolved challenges within CASA, there are quite a few. The number one is resourcing of the regulator. We might have people, but you also need skills. You need skills, people with the necessary skills to deal with this sort of technological environment that we need to ensure that we are on the forefront of it. There are issues around structural matters. The funding is possibly the one issue. Our funding was cut quite substantially in the 2020 financial year. And if you do not have access to funding, you have to look internally and see whether you can deliver on that. But if you do not have the skills to manage these projects and ensure that we can implement these regulations, it becomes a problem for the regulator itself.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chairperson. I think I'm answered, except for the fact that Mr. Zimri is answering like a real public servant. Every time there's a complaint about funding. But it's okay. We accept that. In the case of ICASA, we also understand that you need money to do certain things. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And also, let me just, it's not so much, just to get the clarity for Ntate Zimri. Ntate Zimri, are you saying actually the ICASA on the side of the budget, seriously, it's having a serious challenge in order that it can attend other matters that are supposed to be attended there? So, according to you, what are you suggesting? Because now you have tried also to give us an example of Botswana side. On our side, what are you suggesting as an input on that challenge?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, all member. Yes, sir. We, as a regulator, we made some inputs to this portfolio committee and also to various other functions in terms of funding. Again, as I mentioned earlier on, if it's possible for us to retain some of the funds that we generate as a certain authority and ensure that we can then enforce the regulations that we put in place, participate in all these different processes, not only in South Africa, but on the continent and internationally, to stay on the forefront of these technologies. And that's basically the benefit that as a regulator, if we do have the necessary skills, if we do have the necessary competence to deal with things, we can then roll out these things more effective and efficient as a regulator, if we do have enough funding to do that. On other hand, we also have to look at a lot of our skills. People are busy retiring, and I think we need to build skills or build that competency within the regulator and ensure that there is a skills transfer to some extent. And if you do not have access to these funds, there are issues around litigation, and we also, as a regulator, get involved in that on a possible regular basis. That's where funding is also required. And, it's important that we do have sufficient funds to run the regulator as an independent institution.
So the last two questions. On the side of the, I would say it's public participation or is it community education, on the side of the regulators, are you saying, are you doing enough on the side of ICASA in order that at least the community must have an information there? Then lastly, we are thinking on the issue of emerging other entities. What are you saying? What is your view also there? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, honourable member. And I think that's possibly a general issue within in South Africa. Consumer activism is not as it should be, especially in the ICT space. I think it's something that we, as a regulator, we established the Consumer Advisory Panel, which basically gives us now a platform where they take on board the needs of various communities and making input to our regulatory frameworks. Whatever regulations we come up with, our consumer advisory panel will basically give us some advice. They also participate in our regulatory making processes. In terms of public participation, yes, we do on a regular basis. We go out to the communities. We do have what they call activations that in these communities where we actually present what ICASA is all about. And that's physical. We go to the deep rural areas where we actually present ICASA's function and basically mobilize on the ground the the community took to attend these activities. Throughout with INICASA, we do have a cross functional team that basically then explain to the community what ICASA is all about. Then there are the medium, the online medium, where we actually on Twitter and online, where we actually present what ICASA does on a day-to-day basis. In terms of the merging of institutions, it's not only, again, it's not only South Africa that this is happening. We need to look at how do we optimize these various separate institutions that's there at this point in time. In a South African context, there is a move to merge ICASA with the .z domain name authority, and also with the USASA. Which is, in other jurisdictions, that those things are happening, it's working, and I can't see any device can't work in our country.
Just one question on my side. You've spoken to roaming in your presentation, but I just want to check. Why have you left that part to be just an issue of commercial arrangements for so long before an early intervention, especially to protect new entrants into the market that can't really put up infrastructure? Yeah, just that one question.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, Chair, the roaming arrangements are, at the moment, it is a commercial arrangement amongst our operators. And this allows operators to enter into agreements, or commercial agreements, to have, possibly from day one, at the same coverage as the incumbent operator. So, for example, when Cell C got into the market, Cell C never built a network, but they could enter into a roaming agreement with either Vodacom or MTN or one of the other operators. So they could have, from day one, they could have national coverage or 90%, at least 95% of the country coverage or population at least. But on the other hand, as a regulator, we also need to ensure that there is infrastructure competition and so that all operators can compete in that space and ensure that they actually roll out a network. And this is what we found in the sector, that having these as commercial arrangements amongst operators, so then easier to have this negotiation. But it's a market in terms of how mobile services market the inquiry. One of the findings is possibly something that we need to look into, these roaming arrangements that's out there. Operators can abuse their dominance in this space, and that's basically how the market structure works, is that the dominant operators will set these roaming rates, which can be quite substantial and can also create, like you said, a barrier to entry, or it can, basically the services that's on a specific network might be more costly to actually rolling onto the network or providing the service.
I think we have allowed all members to ask questions. As you can see, some who don't follow up anymore because I think you would have covered the ground. I must take this opportunity then to give you a minute to say your last point that you want to say to the committee before I actually officially allow you to leave.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honourable members. Chair, yes, so just from my side, I think, as I said earlier on, momentum is there at ICASA. When we arrived at ICASA, we were sitting at something like 27% of performance. And we presented our report last year, and we close to, well, obviously the plus 80%, and it's something that we as the regulator want to maintain. And it's all about continuity, I think, because for me that's important that we deal with that and to ensure that there is continuity and also the institutional knowledge to actually to ensure that that happens. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members.
No, thank you. I think all administrative matters would still be dealt with between yourself and the support staff. So we thank you also for being patient as we were changing the program. Thanks for that. So you'd also hear from the administrators on the other arrangements. Thanks, Mr. Peter. Thank you. Honourable members, we'll just